She spends her days drifting on the planks strewn across the Philippine Sea, scattered yet fully united in their goal to overwhelm the muddied waters. Few people understand why she refused to just take one of the many rafts around her, but this wasn't even the most interesting thing about this scene. The most troubling sights were the bottles that lay between her hands, and within them, her promises to reclaim the waters that had long been pilfered by a climate that could never sit still. She wanted, no, she needed to understand what was happening. The rallying cries, the power of the people is stronger than the people in power. But was the power of the people stronger than the rage of the earth? The earth had blessed her nation. The Philippines is gifted with the richest marine waters. They were the center of the center of marine biodiversity on earth. At least, that's what they said. She came from a family of fishers, witnessing firsthand how harrowing winds and bone-chilling waves could wreck livelihoods with a snap of a finger. Soon after her plight, she received news that the latest typhoon had missed her home province, but just barely. They called it a crisis averted, but was it really? Little did she know, the same could be heard in Thailand and Cambodia, sharing the Pacific Ocean she'd been unable to name. Why was the message not reaching them?
Climate change is the biggest threat to our planet.
Global call to tackle climate change.
Climate change is very, very real.
A third of Canadians don't believe in the science behind climate change.
You would think that because we're in the middle of the South Pacific Ocean, what's happening at a coal mine in Germany wouldn't be exported to us, but it is. It's exported right to our front door.
The debate is settled. Climate change is a fact.
The ocean hums its tenets through precise and calculated movement. I've always been fascinated by it, being able to paint the abstractions of our humanity, the emotional, the fleeting gestures, and everything in between can be so liberating. We, as humans, are creatures born into motion and constant flux, and our oceans are just the same. But what many fail to see is that these are movements in tandem, and our movements have started to go against the grain, paralyzing our ocean, silencing the signs of rising tides and acidifying waters. For what? Up to 80% of ocean plastic pollution enters the ocean from land. It is believed that there are 5.25 trillion pieces of plastic debris in the ocean, killing an estimated 100,000 marine creatures and 1 million seabirds a year from plastic entanglement and pollution. By 2050, there will be more plastic than fish in the world's oceans. I come from a country where climate calamities are not misplaced, and even expected. Ondoy and Yolanda are two of the many super typhoons that have wreaked havoc upon our tiny island nation in the past decade. Prolonged and frequent rainfall, strong winds, temperature variations between the extreme heat and extreme cold, amongst many things, have contributed to an anti-ocean-friendly infrastructure ramped up to keep us afloat. The Philippines, being an archipelago divided into numerous islands and islets, has a long coastline. Internal seas and large oceans are a prominent geographic feature of this country, consisting of beaches, mangrove forests, coral reefs, the list goes on. With so much happening in one place, it's hard to say that one nation or one group of people lays claim to an entire ocean. Oceans were meant to be protected by a greater collective, but clearly, we haven't been doing enough. We must consider the pros and cons of our grassroots activism, reconcile our humanity in the ocean once again. We should sculpt a new philosophy, better guiding our efforts to reclaim our waters, should we choose to let them. At the age of 12, my family and I relocated to Thailand. Corporatism and fast-paced production cultures promised my dad better work here, and required him to move as soon as possible. He was told that we wouldn't see the same struggles that we did in the Philippines. Less floods, less rains, better oceans. But I couldn't help but notice how similar our situations were. The Klongs, Thailand's many small canal areas, had been in no better shape than our waters. The towering infrastructure and spiraling transportation channels of the Bangkok metropolis had built themselves around these bodies of water, leaving traces of their activity in beer cans and cigarette butts. Then wake up next morning to breathe in heat and carbon residue. But this was only the city. To learn that the Thai side of the Pacific Ocean suffered worse, traces of rainbow-colored oils and carbonic acids showing just how easy it was to be enchanted by city life. Yet at school, we preached of climate change relief efforts and selfless curriculum-mandated activism. It felt off-putting. Seeing boxes labeled Tacloban Relief Fund making their way to the nation that I had abandoned. Soon after this plight, we learned about the Omgoy program, named after the rural communities living on the border between Thailand and Cambodia. Most, if not all, citizens in these communities are political refugees. In their struggle, the community has not only turned to illegal hunting practices, but have devastated oceans and marine life around them. I couldn't blame them. What had they of the environmental education that was required of me, but so willingly neglected? This was a situation that didn't lend itself easily to solutions. I soon realized that very little had been done to color climate change activism with the narratives of most marginalized people. To this day, over 4 billion people lack access to the internet, more than half of the global population. Very little can be achieved by pandering solely to those privileged enough to receive the message. Efforts must be made to empower those that often find themselves at a crossroads, choosing between their survival and that of the oceans. And with this, I've developed 3 pretty intuitive points for how to deal with ocean conservation. I call them the axioms for change. Axiom number 1, recognize the issue at hand and appreciate the nuances behind them. Oftentimes, half the battle is acknowledging that there is a problem. Having moved from country to country throughout my life, I've gotten the opportunity to connect with and discuss this with people from all around the world. I've started and lurked on forum pages, online groups, and even founded my own service initiatives. One of the people I've gotten to connect to was Rehab, a Moroccan tourism major with a passion for eco-friendly vacationeering.
I remember being by the desk checking people in. They would be discussing how excited they were to see the beach, and all I could remember was this one young girl. Half of her waist was buried as she played under the sand, trash at face level. It's a haunting sight, funnily enough. We still wonder why we're dealing with so many of these problems, but now we know we shouldn't be so surprised.
Axiom 2. Embrace what you can offer and inform your actions with the end in mind. Too often, the layman is discouraged from making a move. There's a reason why the layman is the majority. But while we may have power in numbers, we should balance our quantity with even more quality work. Know where you can contribute, understand your limitations, and always stay on a growth-minded path. Climate change was never meant to be tackled by a single person. Axiom 3. Action begets change, and change begets change. The current activist axiom claims that to gather support, people must spread content like a wildfire. That this knowledge will ultimately prompt action. But while this has had its benefits in the past, it unfortunately isn't always the case. The media is filled with sensationalized messages crying for institutional reform, begging for the government to understand the climate risks at hand, but tangible action still remains limited. We see images of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and we're taught the 3 R's. Reduce, reuse, recycle. But what about the 4th R? Repeat. Or the 5th R? Reflect. We continuously fail to create a link between our actions and the consequences, and we compromise on the livelihoods of those on the margins as a result. The solution? We must be more willing to compromise on convenience in the long term. But we should also be more proactive in identifying issues within the institution itself. Hope really isn't lost. On the global stage, the discussion of climate change has been coded with a sense of urgency. Since 2016, 197 countries have ratified the Paris Agreement, an international framework established to combat climate change and adapt to its effects. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought a crisis in and of itself, but ironically enough, it has spawned hope. Many people have bucked down to say, maybe this is the pause that we needed all along. I remain somewhat hesitant to agree with this, but I also hesitate to claim the opposite, saying that the idea of a calamity thwarting the chaos of another calamity is just rooted in idealism and nothing more. But I've since been reminded of the very tangible, very current reality of our oceans, and I've been determined to do something about it. Perhaps one day we can sing of peace as we glide through the oceans. Wooden planks across our seas made our armor, lathered with the lessons of our past. Maybe we'll finally reach a point in our climate strikes and campaigns to ask, not if, but when.